Food of the Gods, The Search for the Original Tree of Knowledge, A Radical History of Plants, Drugs, and Human Evolution, by Terence McKenna. Narrated by Jeffrey Kafer. Copyright 1992 by Terence McKenna. This unabridged audiobook is recorded by arrangement with Lux Natura and Brockman Incorporated, and was produced in the year 2012 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Introduction. A Manifesto for New Thought About Drugs. A specter is haunting planetary culture. The specter of drugs. The definition of human dignity created by the Renaissance and elaborated into the democratic values of modern Western civilization seems on point of dissolving. The major media inform us at high volume that the human capacity for obsessional behavior and addiction has made a satanic marriage with modern pharmacology, marketing, and high-speed transportation. Previously obscure forms of chemical use now freely compete in a largely unregulated global marketplace. Whole governments and nations in the Third World are held in thrall by legal and illegal commodities promoting obsessional behavior. This situation is not new, but it is getting worse. Until quite recently, international narcotics cartels were the obedient creations of governments and intelligence agencies that were searching for sources of invisible money with which to finance their own brand of institutionalized obsessional behavior. Today, these drug cartels have evolved, through the unprecedented rise in the demand for cocaine, into rogue elephants before whose power even their creators have begun to grow uneasy. We are beset by the sad spectacle of drug wars, waged by governmental institutions that usually are paralyzed by lethargy and inefficiency, or are in transparent collusion with the international drug cartels they are publicly pledged to destroy. No light can penetrate this situation of pandemic drug use and abuse unless we undertake a hard-eyed reappraisal of our present situation and an examination of some old, nearly forgotten patterns of drug-related experience and behavior. The importance of this task cannot be overestimated. Clearly, the self-administration of psychoactive substances, legal and illegal, will be increasingly a part of the future unfolding of global culture. An agonizing reappraisal. Any reappraisal of our use of substances must begin with the notion of habit, a settled tendency or practice. Familiar, repetitious, and largely unexamined habits are simply the things that we do. People, says an old adage, are creatures of habit. Culture is largely a matter of habit, learned from parents and those around us, and then slowly modified by shifting conditions and inspired innovations. Yet, however slow these cultural modifications may seem, when contrasted with a slower-than-glaciers modification of species and ecosystems, culture presents a spectacle of wild and continuous novelty. If nature represents a principle of economy, then culture surely must exemplify the principle of innovation through excess. When habits consume us, when our devotion to them exceeds the culturally defined norms, we label them as obsessions. We feel in such situations as though the uniquely human dimension of free will has somehow been violated. We can become obsessed with almost anything, with a behavior pattern such as reading the morning paper, or with material objects, the collector, land and property, the empire builder, or power over other people, the politician. While many of us may be collectors, few of us have the opportunity to indulge our obsessions to the point of becoming empire builders or politicians. The obsessions of the ordinary person tend to focus on the here and now, on the realm of immediate gratification through sex, food, and drugs. An obsession with the chemical constituents of food and drugs, also called metabolites, is labeled an addiction. Addictions and obsessions are unique to human beings. Yes, ample anecdotal evidence supports the existence of a preference for intoxicated states among elephants, chimpanzees, and some butterflies. But as when we contrast the linguistic abilities of chimpanzees and dolphins with human speech, we see that these animal behaviors are enormously different from those of humans. Habit, obsession, addiction. These words are signposts along a path of ever-decreasing free will. Denial of the power of free will is implicit in the notion of addiction, and in our culture, addictions are viewed seriously. especially exotic or unfamiliar addictions. In the 19th century, the opium addict was the opium fiend, a description that harkened back to the idea of a demonic possession by a controlling force from without. In the 20th century, the addict as a person possessed has been replaced with the notion of addiction as a disease. And with the notion of addiction as a disease, the role of free will is finally reduced to the vanishing point. After all, we are not responsible for the diseases that we may inherit or develop. Today, however, human chemical dependence plays a more conscious role than ever before in the formation and maintenance of cultural values. Since the middle of the 19th century, and with ever greater speed and efficiency, organic chemistry has placed into the hands of researchers, physicians, and ultimately everyone, an endless cornucopia of synthetic drugs. These drugs are more powerful, more effective, of greater duration, and in some cases, many times more addictive than their natural relatives. An exception is cocaine, although a natural product, when refined, concentrated, and injected, is particularly destructive. The rise of a global information culture has led to the ubiquity of information on the recreational, aphrodisiacal, stimulating, sedative, and psychedelic plants that have been discovered by inquisitive human beings living in remote and previously unconnected parts of the planet. At the same time that this flood of botanical and ethnographic information arrived in Western society, grafting other cultures' habits onto our own and giving us greater choices than ever, great strides were being made in the synthesis of complex organic molecules and in the understanding of the molecular machinery of genes and heredity. These new insights and technologies are contributing to a very different culture of psychopharmacological engineering. Designer drugs such as MDMA or ecstasy and anabolic steroids used by athletes and teenagers to stimulate muscle development are harbingers of an era of ever more frequent and effective pharmacological intervention in how we look, perform, and feel. The notion of regulating on a planetary scale, first hundreds and then thousands of easily produced, highly sought after, but illegal synthetic substances is appalling to anyone who hopes for a more open and less regimented future. An Archaic Revival. This book will explore the possibility of a revival of the archaic, or pre-industrial and pre-literate, attitude toward community, substance use, and nature, an attitude that served our nomadic prehistoric ancestors long and well, before the rise of the current cultural style we call Western. The Archaic refers to the Upper Paleolithic, a period 7 to 10,000 years in the past, immediately preceding the invention and dissemination of agriculture. The Archaic was a time of nomadic pastoralism and partnership, a culture based on cattle raising, shamanism, and goddess worship. I have organized the discussion in a roughly chronological order, with the last and most future-oriented sections taking up and recasting the archaic themes of the early chapters. The argument proceeds along the lines of a pharmacological pilgrim's progress. Thus, I have called the four sections of the book Paradise, Paradise Lost, Hell, and hopefully not too optimistically, Paradise Regained. Obviously, we cannot continue to think about drug use in the same old ways. As a global society, we must find a new guiding image for our culture, one that unifies the aspirations of humanity with the needs of the planet and the individual. Analysis of the existential incompleteness within us that drives us to form relationships of dependency and addiction with plants and drugs will show that at the dawn of history, we lost something precious, the absence of which has made us ill with narcissism. Only a recovery of the relationship that we evolved with nature through use of psychoactive plants before the fall into history can offer us hope of a humane and open-ended future. Before we commit ourselves irrevocably to the chimera of a drug-free culture purchased at the price of a complete jettisoning of the ideals of a free and democratic planetary society, we must ask hard questions. Why, as a species, are we so fascinated by altered states of consciousness? What has been their impact on our aesthetic and spiritual aspirations? What have we lost by denying the legitimacy of each individual's drive to use substances to experience personally the transcendental and the sacred? My hope is that answering these questions will force us to confront the consequences of denying nature's spiritual dimension, of seeing nature as nothing more than a resource to be fought over and plundered. Informed discussion of these issues will give no comfort to the control-obsessed, no comfort to know-nothing religious fundamentalism, no comfort to beige fascism of whatever form. The question of how we, as a society and as individuals, relate to psychoactive plants in the late 20th century raises a larger question. How, over time, have we been shaped by the shifting alliances that we have formed and broken with various members of the vegetable world as we have made our way through the maze of history? This is a question that will occupy us in some detail in the chapters to come. The Ur myth of our culture opens in the Garden of Eden, with the eating of the fruit of the Tree of Knowledge. If we do not learn from our past, this story could end with a planet toxified, its forests a memory, its biological cohesion shattered, our birth legacy a weed-choked wasteland. If we have overlooked something in our previous attempts to understand our origins and place in nature, are we now in a position to look back and to understand not only our past, but our future in an entirely new way? If we can recover the lost sense of nature as a living mystery, we can be confident of new perspectives on the cultural adventure that surely must lie ahead. We have the opportunity to move away from the gloomy, historical nihilism that characterizes the reign of our deeply patriarchal dominator culture. We are in a position to regain the archaic appreciation of our near-symbiotic relationship with psychoactive plants as a wellspring of insight and coordination flowing from the vegetable world to the human world. The mystery of our own consciousness and powers of self-reflection is somehow linked to this channel of communication with the unseen mind that shamans insist is the spirit of the living world of nature. For shamans and shamanic cultures, exploration of this mystery has always been a credible alternative to living in a confining materialist culture. We of the individual democracies can choose to explore these unfamiliar dimensions now, or we can wait until the advancing destruction of the living planet makes all further exploration irrelevant. A New Manifesto. The time has therefore come, in the great natural discourse that is the history of ideas, thoroughly to rethink our fascination with habitual use of psychoactive and physioactive plants. We have to learn from the excesses of the past, especially the 1960s, but we cannot simply advocate just say no any more than we can advocate try it, you'll like it. Nor can we support a view that wishes to divide society into users and non-users. We need a comprehensive approach to these questions that encompass the deeper evolutionary and historical implications. The mutation-inducing influence of diet on early humans and the effect of exotic metabolites on the evolution of their neurochemistry and culture is still unstudied territory. The early hominids' adoption of an omnivorous diet and their discovery of the power of certain plants were decisive factors in moving early humans out of the stream of animal evolution and into the fast-rising tide of language and culture. Our remote ancestors discovered that certain plants, when self-administered, suppress appetite, diminish pain, supply bursts of sudden energy, confer immunity against pathogens, and synergize cognitive activities. These discoveries set us on the long journey of self-reflection. Once we became tool-using omnivores, evolution itself changed from a process of slow modification of our physical form to a rapid definition of cultural forms by the elaboration of rituals, languages, writing, mnemonic skills, and technology. These immense changes occurred largely as a result of the synergies between human beings and the various plants with which they interacted and co-evolved. An honest appraisal of the impact of plants on the foundations of human institutions would find them to be absolutely primary. In the future, the application of botanically inspired steady-state solutions, such as zero population growth, hydrogen extraction from seawater, and massive recycling programs, may help reorganize our societies and planet along more holistic, environmentally aware, neo-archaic lines. The suppression of the natural human fascination with altered states of consciousness and the present perilous situation of all life on Earth are intimately and causally connected. When we suppress access to shamanic ecstasy, we close off the refreshing waters of emotion that flow from having a deeply bonded, almost symbiotic relationship to the Earth. As a consequence, the maladaptive social styles that encourage overpopulation, resource mismanagement, and environmental toxification develop and maintain themselves. No culture on Earth is as heavily narcotized as the industrial West in terms of being inured to the consequences of maladaptive behavior. We pursue a business-as-usual attitude in a surreal atmosphere of mounting crises and irreconcilable contradictions. As a species, we need to acknowledge the depth of our historical dilemma. We will continue to play with half a deck as long as we continue to tolerate cardinals of government and science who presume to dictate where human curiosity can legitimately focus its attention and where it cannot. Such restrictions on the human imagination are demeaning and preposterous. The government not only restricts research on psychedelics that could conceivably yield valuable psychological and medical insights, it presumes to prevent their religious and spiritual use as well. Religious use of psychedelic plants is a civil rights issue. Its restriction is the repression of a legitimate religious sensibility. In fact, it is not a religious sensibility that is being repressed, but the religious sensibility, an experience of religio based on the plant-human relationships that were in place long before the advent of history. We can no longer postpone an honest reappraisal of the true cost and benefits of habitual use of plants and drugs versus the true costs and benefits of suppression of their use. Our global culture finds itself in danger of succumbing to an Orwellian effort to bludgeon the problem out of existence through military and police terrorism directed toward drug consumers in our own population and drug producers in the Third World. This repressive response is largely fueled by an unexamined fear that is the product of misinformation and historical ignorance. Deep-seated cultural biases explain why the Western mind turns suddenly anxious and repressive on contemplating drugs. Substance-induced changes in consciousness dramatically reveal that our mental life has physical foundations. Psychoactive drugs thus challenge the Christian assumption of the inviolability and special ontological status of the soul. Similarly, they challenge the modern idea of the ego and its inviolability and control structures. In short, encounters with psychedelic plants throw into question the entire worldview of the dominator culture. We will come across this theme of the ego and the dominator culture often in this re-examination of history. In fact, the terror the ego feels in contemplating the dissolution of boundaries between self and world not only lies behind the suppression of altered states of consciousness, but more generally explains the suppression of the feminine, the foreign and exotic, and transcendental experiences. In the prehistoric but post-archaic times of about 5000 to 3000 BC, suppression of partnership society by patriarchal invaders set the stage for suppression of the open-ended experimental investigation of nature carried on by shamans. In highly organized societies, that archaic tradition was replaced by one of dogma, priestcraft, patriarchy, warfare, and eventually, rational and scientific or dominator values. To this point, I have used the terms partnership and dominator styles of culture without explanation. I owe these useful terms to Rhian Eisler and her important revisioning of history, The Chalice and the Blade. Eisler has advanced the notion that partnership models of society preceded and later competed with and were oppressed by dominator forms of social organization. Dominator cultures are hierarchical, paternalistic, materialistic, and male-dominated. Eisler believes that the tension between the partnership and dominator organizations and the overexpression of the dominator model are responsible for our alienation from nature, from ourselves, and from each other. Eisler has written a brilliant synthesis of the emergence of human culture in the ancient Near East and the unfolding political debate concerning the feminizing of culture and the need to overcome patterns of male dominance in creating a viable future. Her analysis of gender politics raises the level of debate beyond those who have so shrilly hailed and decried this or that ancient matriarchy or patriarchy. The Chalice and the Blade introduces the notion of partnership societies and dominator societies, and uses the archaeological record to argue that over vast areas and for many centuries, the partnership societies of the ancient Middle East were without warfare and upheaval. Warfare and patriarchy arrived with the appearance of dominator values. The dominator inheritance. Our culture, self-toxified by the poisonous byproducts of technology and egocentric ideology, is the unhappy inheritor of the dominator attitude, that alteration of consciousness by the use of plants or substances is somehow wrong, onanistic, and perversely antisocial. I will argue that suppression of shamanic gnosis, with its reliance and insistence on ecstatic dissolution of the ego, has robbed us of life's meaning and made us enemies of the planet, of ourselves, and our grandchildren. We are killing the planet in order to keep intact the wrong-headed assumptions of the ego-dominator cultural style. It is time for change.